Chapter 27, God Moved. Don't quit now. With that answer, I started thinking of a way to get those cables up that 20-foot rock wall. But with only a handful of tools and resources available at the bridge site, was there a simple solution? Then I remembered the rope I had brought to secure the cables. I could tie a small rock on one end and throw it over the edge. The men at the bottom would tie the rope around the cable, and then a few other men and I would pull the cable to the top of the cliff. In my mind, this seemed like it would work. At the bridge site, I was relieved to see most of the men had returned to help. I had already seen a few of the other men standing along the roadside with their canisters of fresh milk, waiting for the truck to come by and collect it. Though these two communities needed a bridge, they still had to do what was necessary to provide for their families each day. The first thing I did that morning was place a piece of red flagging tape around the damaged area of the 7/8-inch cable. This would be the first place to be cut, because I wasn't taking any chances of this damaged section getting pulled across the river. Unfortunately, I knew this meant there wouldn't be enough of the 7/8-inch cable left for all the needed pulls this week. Still waiting on the generator, I went to the small house and retrieved the grinder, leather gloves, face shield, and a small roll of tie wire. I walked back to where the damaged piece of cable needed to be cut. I cut and wrapped a small piece of the tie wire around the cable, then tightly twisted the ends together with my pliers. Just like on the 1-inch cable, I installed two pieces of the tie wire on each side of the cut mark. It wasn't long before the truck carrying the generator arrived. I was glad to see the generator was equipped with wheels on one end, since I knew there weren't any extension cords readily available. The only problem with the generator was that it apparently didn't get used much, because at first it wouldn't crank. I stood back as several of the men, including Santos and Carlos, worked on it. After about 30 minutes of them tinkering with the carburetor and spark plug, it finally cranked. We let it continue to run while we maneuvered it down the hill to the cable. Being in a developing country, I wasn't sure how many of these men had ever used a side grinder. I knew this type of grinder, with its thin rotating cutting disc, is a powerful tool that deserved its rightful respect. One slip while cutting and you could easily come up missing a finger or two. Being the safety coordinator at the electric company, I knew to don all of the necessary safety equipment, including wearing a long-sleeved shirt, leather gloves, and face shield to protect myself from the hot sparks created as the cable was being cut. I placed a small piece of wood under the cable, lifting it slightly off the ground. I signaled for two men to stand on each side of the cut mark and place a foot on the cable to keep the cable from moving while it was being cut. With the preparation work completed, I plugged in the grinder. I flipped on the generator circuit breaker and slowly pressed on the grinder's large trigger. I wasn't surprised that the grinder sounded just like the one I used at home, with its thin cutting disc spinning at several thousand revolutions per minute. I carefully turned the grinder sideways and placed the rotating disc on the cut mark. As I watched the spinning disc eating its way through the 7/8-inch steel cable, I noticed the disc not only glowed bright red, but got a lot smaller too. As I finished the cut, I let go of the grinder's trigger and held it up in the sunlight. Everyone who saw it immediately began laughing. Now I knew what my dad meant when he would say, "Son, let the tool do the work," because only a small cutting area now remained on the disc. I had obviously rushed the cut. While the other men were pulling the generator and carrying the tools down the hill to the cable spools, Santos and I went back to the small house to look one more time for extra cutting disc. To our dismay, we still didn't find any. Then I thought, what are the chances of finding these small cutting discs in a town of a third world country? Building a bridge in a developing country, I had already learned to be resourceful, but the side grinder was the only way I saw to cut these large diameter steel cables. Walking down the hill, I noticed the men had already unspooled more of the 7/8-inch cable. Carlos showed me the red flagging tape he had placed on the cable at the 122 meter mark. This made me remember that the Bridges to Prosperity's main objective and the main purpose for me coming and helping build this bridge was to show and train these communities to make the building of these bridges sustainable. So this time, I placed and twisted two tie wires on one side of the cut mark and let Carlos install the other two. As Carlos was making the final twist on his last tie, it broke. This was obviously the training part, or trial and error, since I had broken a few myself. With the 7/8 inch cable now prepared for cutting, it was now time to make the second cut of the day. Carlos again had to pull on the rope several times before the generator would crank, but once it did, it idled smoothly. I put on the gloves and face shield and began cutting into the 7/8 inch cable. This time I went much slower, trying to preserve what cutting surface was left on the disc. We then repeated the same cutting preparation steps for the 1-inch cable. As I finished cutting the cable, I could tell that was the last cut to be made with that disc. With no replacement disc available for cutting the remaining cables, our work was eventually going to come to a standstill. At that moment, a gentleman in a uniform shirt rode up on a motorcycle and started talking with Santos. From what I could understand from the conversation, he wanted to make sure we were satisfied with the generator. Then Santos pointed to me. As the man approached me, I immediately recognized the insignia on his shirt. He worked for the Alcaldía. Milos had stated in an email that officials from the Alcaldía had on several occasions met with the communities, trying to encourage them to continue working on the bridge. I wasn't surprised by the Alcaldía's involvement, since I believe they knew if the communities failed to complete this bridge, then my church would probably wouldn't provide the funding to build another one. In actuality, I knew if the communities failed to complete this bridge, then I would have a really difficult time raising the funds for another bridge. The successful completion of this first bridge was going to be a win-win for everyone involved. After exchanging names and a handshake, I showed him the grinder's worn-out cutting disc. Carlos came over and asked what would have taken me a lot longer to ask if he would go and purchase more cutting disc. He gave a positive response and a smile. Now the only problem I saw was in how to remove the worn-out disc from the grinder. The cutting disc is held firmly in place by a large, flat nut which has four narrow, equally spaced slots. I knew the only way to loosen and remove that nut was by placing a small blunt object, such as a common screwdriver, at the edge of one of those slots. Lightly tapping on the screwdriver with a hammer would cause a large nut to slowly rotate and loosen, allowing the removal of the disc. On my trips, I always brought a hammer but never saw the need for bringing a screwdriver until now. I went and began searching through my backpack, hoping by chance to find something that could be used in lieu of a screwdriver. I couldn't find anything to use except for a knife. Then I glanced over at the clear snack container and remembered what the security officer had found in it at the airport, a center punch. I smiled widely as I walked over and picked up the container, removed the lid, and pulled out the center punch. It only took a couple of taps on the punch before the nut broke free. I quickly removed the nut and the cutting disc from the grinder. I wrapped the disc in a napkin before I handed it to the gentleman, telling him, "Cuatro," or four. "Sí," was his reply, holding out his hand to indicate he needed money. I reached and took out my wallet and discovered that I didn't have any Nicaraguan money to give him. There were a few American dollar bills, but I knew they wouldn't be enough to purchase even one disc. Though I had never met this man before, I reached into my wallet and took out a brand new $100 bill. The look of amazement on his face was priceless as I handed the bill to him. This was probably more than he normally made in a week at his job. Still, I had complete trust and faith that he would return before lunch with the four cutting disc and my change. Putting those thoughts aside, I took my position in front of the 7/8 inch cable spool and started the routine of unspooling and watching for any kinks that tried to form. When the men finally stopped pulling, I knew they had to be close to where they had stopped with the other cables. I quickly looked up, and at that moment became a little lightheaded. I could see that Carlos was wading up the hill with the tape measure, but I was too exhausted to even take two steps. I paused for a moment, then leaned and placed my head down on the cable spool. I closed my eyes, trying to physically dig deeper, trying to muster another ounce of strength. The next thing I remember was being startled by the crashing sound of a plastic bag that dropped on the spool near my head. I opened my eyes enough to tell the bag contained the four cutting discs that we desperately needed. I quickly looked up and saw the gentleman from the Alcadia smiling while holding a wad of bills. I stood up straight and held out my hand, listening as he counted each bill, then the coins. Honestly, at that moment, I couldn't have told you if he gave me back the right amount of change or not. I smiled and stuffed the money in my pants pocket because in my heart I knew he had. There was no reason for him to try and keep any of the money since he already knew how much of my own time and my church's money had been given to his people and this project. I looked over and noticed that one of the men had already placed a new disc on the shaft of the grinder. He had apparently watched me remove the old disc that morning. I watched as he finished tightening the large nut using the hammer and center punch. He actually did a good job in tightening the nut. After he handed me the grinder, I tried to give the new disc a test spin, but it wouldn't turn. I knew the disc was the correct size. I turned the grinder over and saw he had simply installed the disc upside down. An innocent mistake, but one that could have damaged the grinder's motor when it was turned on. I got the hammer and punch and removed the disc, flipped it over, and reinstalled it. This time the disc spun freely. I made sure Carlos was watching me correctly install and check the disc, since he would probably be doing the next one. After preparing the 7/8-inch cable to be cut, I stepped over to the 1-inch cable spool and once again began the unspooling process. Thankfully, more men had now shown up to help with this heavier cable. Once the signal was given to stop pulling, the cable was measured and marked at 122 meters. This time, I let Carlos prepare the cable for cutting. He confidently demonstrated that he knew what he was doing. When Carlos had finished, he placed a piece of wood under the cable and had two guys stand on the cable. He cranked the generator and plugged the grinder's cord into the 120 volt outlet. He put on the face shield and made a slow, smooth cut through the 1-inch cable. Then he moved to the other side of the generator and cut the 7/8-inch cable. With all the cables now cut, we started the unspooling of the remaining 7/8-inch cable. I let two other men manage the unspooling of the cable. There were only a few wraps of cable left on the spool when I grabbed the cable to help pull it up the hill. Once all the cable was pulled off the spool, I hollered, "Alto!" signaling for everyone to stop pulling. Then I noticed something, a welded cable splice. I reluctantly took a picture and emailed it to Milos, all the time knowing a length of cable with any type of splice couldn't be used for the pedestrian bridge. Then something totally unexpected happened. It began to pour down rain. Everyone scrambled for the little shelter available underneath the trees. I ran and grabbed my backpack, then took refuge in the empty cable spool. As it continued to rain, I noticed Santos, Gary, and the gentleman from the Alcadia all standing against the bridge tiers, which offered them no shelter. They were standing there getting soaking wet. Suddenly, something moved on the opposite side of the cable spool. I slowly peeked around the center of the wooden spool, expecting to see a man contortion somewhat like me. Instead, I came face to face with a dog. I let out a screech, but the dog didn't move. I laughed, thinking this was probably the best doghouse he had ever been in, one where he actually didn't get wet inside. As I repositioned myself to avoid the water starting to drip from the top of the cable spool, I looked over at the men who were still standing against the bridge tiers, now getting wetter from the blowing rain. I remembered the poncho in my backpack. Finding the poncho, I thought for a moment, then ran and gave it to the gentleman from the Alcadia. After all, it was the Alcadia who had sent the air-conditioned truck to pick me up at the airport and provided the generator. The rain lasted well over 30 minutes before finally tapering off. I quickly tied a piece of red flagging tape to mark each cable's center and placed a designated color of electrical tape on each of the ends. The flagging tape at the center was so that the excess cable for the cable anchors could be divided equally between the two sides without having to guess. Now turning my attention back to the cables, I knew we had 2 7/8 inch and 2 1 inch cables that were ready to be pulled across the river. Getting the attention of Santos and Gary, I pointed to the cables and then to the other side of the river. Gary, the Patuxtla community leader, stood at the end of the 1 inch cable and yelled for everyone to grab hold of it. I watched as each man picked up the huge cable and slowly started walking it down to the steep bank towards the river. They didn't stop at the river, but instead waded across it and stopped on the other side at the bottom of the 20-foot cliff. A few of the men stood in the middle of the river, keeping the cable out of the water. The river at this location was only about 15 feet across and maybe 3 feet deep. Thankfully, the winter rains had not yet poured down in this region of the mountains. Seeing the men stop at the bottom of the rock wall, I hurried to my backpack. I quickly took out several pieces of the rope and ran across the large stones in the river to the other side. I picked up a small stone, tied it on one end of the rope, and slowly lowered it over the edge of the cliff. Once the rope reached the men below, one man grabbed it, removed the stone, and tied the rope around the cable. Then he signaled for me to start pulling the rope back. With more men now helping pull the 1 inch cable up the rock wall, I walked around the bridge tiers and located a tree to fix the cable. I wrapped a piece of rope around the tree and tied several knots to secure it. As the men were carrying the cable towards me, I made one handcuff-type hitch and placed it over the end of the cable. I motioned for them to keep pulling as I quickly placed two more hitches on the cable. No sooner was the 1 inch cable secured than the men had started hoisting up the 7/8 inch cable. I quickly demonstrated to Carlos that this cable needed to be brought to the top of the bridge tiers and taken between the cable towers. The men then followed me down the approach ramp to the cable anchor, which at this point was a 10-foot hole in the ground. We needed to secure this walkway cable to one of the trees behind the cable anchor. The only problem with accessing these trees was that the anchor excavation spoil pile, a sizable mound of shale rock, lay between the excavation and the trees. I placed three handcuff hitches on the cable and threw the rope across the excavation to Carlos. Standing on the rocks, Carlos reached and tied the rope around a tree. Although it was the largest tree he could reach, I knew it would easily pull over when the cable was pulled tight from the other side. I carefully crept down the back side of the mound of rock, but still slipped and slid most of the way. I stopped at the bottom of the largest tree. With the other men pulling on the cable, Carlos untied the rope from the tree and slung it towards me. I grabbed the rope and secured it at the bottom of a larger tree. With both cables now secured, everyone went to the other side to secure the other ends. On this side of the river, there was only one tree in the hay field behind the cable anchor excavation. Though the tree was over 50 feet away, it was perfectly in line with the approach ramp. I wrapped a longer piece of rope around the tree and tied several knots to secure it, then waited for the cable. I got excited as the first two men pulling the 7/8 inch cable emerged at the top of the bridge tiers. I could already tell they were struggling with the cable as they began walking down the approach ramp wall. With the help of five others, the cable was carried around the anchor excavation and towards the tree where Santos and I were waiting with the rope. When the tension on the cable became too great for them to pull any more, the men stopped. The cable was almost within my reach. At that moment, I shouted, "Uno, dos, tres!" And they pulled the cable another meter. Santos and I hurriedly slipped one hitch on the end of the cable. Then I helplessly watched as the cable began slipping back through the single hitch. We simply had to pull more cable across. With a look of desperation, I shouted at Santos, "Tres, tres!" I let Santos hold the rope so Carlos and I could both help the men pull. This time, I cried out, "Uno, dos, tres!" With all nine of us pulling as one, the cable moved just enough to allow Santos to place two more hitches around it. Everyone relaxed for a moment. Then we pulled and routed the 1-inch cable around the bridge tiers, securing it to the same tree. This 1-inch cable was one of the bridge's handrail cables and would later be placed on top of the cable tower. With both cables now sagging high above the river, everyone took a well-deserved break.